Center. So glad that you are listening. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can find us, of course, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of those places. You can read our blog, listen to the podcast, investinghope.com. Just click on the About Us tab and all the information is there. So what I want to do today is cover a number of different topics. And you, when I give you the topics, you may say, well, what do they have to do with anything? But I will explain as we go throughout the next hour. So I want to start with what's going on in Hollywood. And if you've watched the news, if you're on social media, you've seen the accusations of Harvey Weinstein. And he's a big-time Hollywood mogul, producer, director, does all these things, a lot of movies. And the sexual assault allegations, and now in the last couple of days, rape allegations and other things. And then what I want to talk about is religious liberty and religious freedom. And we move in the right direction last week at the end of the week as the current administration in the White House decided to take care of some things and take us back to religious freedom that we had in previous administrations that was taken away during the last administration. And then I want to talk about the piece of legislation that was voted on last week by the House and will soon go to the Senate, and that's the 20-week ban. I know we briefly touched on it last week, but I would like to go a little bit more in-depth with that here in a little bit. But I want to start with Hollywood, and what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to walk through every single allegation. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to spend time kind of talking through some of the very graphic information that's been let out over the last few days, and really just terrible stuff that we've learned about. But the interesting thing about Hollywood, and the interesting thing about that whole kind of demographic, I don't even know how to explain it. Almost they act as if they live in a different universe, and many times they do, because of their finances, because of what power they believe they have, and the access that they have to administrations and in the White House, and kind of they're involved in a lot of things. We hear late night talk show hosts, using their platform to talk about healthcare and gun control and to attack those that are pro-life, and we see late night talk show hosts and directors and actors and TV series and different things highlight certain agendas. So they really push against traditional marriage, and they push against celebrating life, and they push abortion on us through our TV screens. And then what we found out over the weekend is ultimately Hollywood is actually what we see in the movies. At times we'll see a movie and we'll go, wow, that the book was better, or the movie was better than the book, or that really, I've been watching the show Narcos on Netflix, and it's highlighting Pablo Escobar and how we went after the drug cartel in the 70s, 80s, and 90s in Colombia. And watching that and going and saying, wow, that was a terrible time in history. And a lot of people died, and a lot of people were affected directly, indirectly. And I kind of feel like that with the Weinstein stuff. I'm watching that and going, so all the rumors that kind of have been discussed and talked about of the casting couch and directors and men assaulting and harassing women and going after minors that are trying to simply get a job in acting and mistreating them and at times raping them and further assaulting them, and then no one is talking about it. No one is saying anything. Harvey Weinstein was heralded by a certain political party that leans left. He's given millions of dollars to candidates. He's heralded by late night talk show hosts. He's heralded by The View and actresses and actors in Hollywood who knew. And this is what we know now. They all knew what he was doing. And you see, his statement that he released said, well, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And, we That's just who we were. It's what we did. And the problem that I have, and David French over at National Review and others have talked about this, is the issue is all of these courageous, quote-unquote, people, actors and actresses that are now coming out and trying to distance themselves from this character, Harvey Weinstein. They're just coming out now because now we know. So it was only they knew, the kind of the cult of Hollywood. They all knew what was going on, but no one else did. And now that the world knows, now all of a sudden they have a conscience and they're saying, man, this guy's really bad. If I'd only known that this was happening. Gwyneth Paltrow released a statement today of an assault by Harvey Weinstein. And then she said that Brad Pitt, her boyfriend at the time, which he is apparently has dated every woman in Hollywood, approached Harvey and said, don't ever let that happen again. But see, they never let that out. So you may be saying, well, Andrew, that's all well and good, but why are you talking about Hollywood when we should be talking about Hope Resource Center? Well, let me connect it for you. What we have seen, and I would venture to say, if we really dug deep into what was going on in Hollywood, how many abortions were funded by Harvey Weinstein? How many abortions are funded by directors and producers of people that are abusing and abusing their power and abusing women? And I would say in some cases, and this is what hasn't come out yet but will because of the rumors that have surfaced, is it's not just female minors that are being abused, but it's male minors being abused by men and women as well in Hollywood. And so the reason that I have such an issue with this, there's multiple reasons, obviously, that I have issues with this. But one of the issues that I have is while we've been lectured at every Oscars award show, every Grammy award show, every award show that isn't a country music award show, we've been lectured by Hollywood type folks on what we need to be doing as a society. We need to fix this, or we need to fix that, or we need to allow women's choice. We need to allow for more abortions. We need to stand with Planned Parenthood. That is what we have heard from Hollywood for years. That is what we have heard from many in Washington, D.C. for years. So we've been lectured. The vast majority of this country has been lectured at all of these award shows. All the while, Hollywood's been hiding what they know to be true, that this man was a serial abuser. And they saw nothing wrong with it. Why? Because he put money in their pockets. They saw nothing wrong with it. Why? Because he gave them jobs. Because he allowed them to write books, and his organization was a big player. And so if you wanted to keep your job, if you didn't want to be blacklisted, you didn't say anything. Who knows, maybe Hollywood will create a movie telling this story. There's an idea. But ultimately it goes back to the value of life. And so Harvey obviously doesn't value life. Obviously, many that were in Hollywood value their jobs more than the life of a young woman that's being abused. And then I think about how many men were standing around seeing this happen and they did nothing. How many people stood around while this happened and did nothing? And then we think, well, if this big-time Hollywood mogul is guilty of these things, we're just scratching the surface. Who else is guilty? Who else has been participating in this type of stuff? And how long has it been going on? And so that's my concern. That's the connection. Is we see people at Hope Resource Center, we see patients at Hope Resource Center that have been abused, they've been assaulted, that some of them have been raped. And we want to give them a voice. And so forgive me when I get a little upset when I'm being lectured by someone that has harbored a serial abuser. Now this isn't time for us to act as if, well, see, conservatives don't have issues. Well, folks, we just had a conservative in Washington, D.C. who ran and always said he was pro-life. We now have proof that he had an affair and told, strongly encouraged his mistress to have an abortion. And he said, yeah, my staff handles all of my social media. I'm not really pro-life. It just looks good for the politics. So you see, I'm not going to spend the first segment of the show talking about one side over the other. We all have issues. But what I am going to do is say, are we consistent? And what we have seen with that Republican leader, that Republican member in Washington, D.C., they have resigned their seat, as they should have. But see, that's why it's important to not just be pro-life in speech only. Our actions have to show that. Do your actions show that? And so what we're going to see over the next few days is you're going to see, maybe, some folks come out and say, yeah, I'm so shocked that he was doing these things, and I denounce that. But I've already seen some people post on Twitter that some actors have come out and said, I can't believe he was doing this. And other actors and actresses have said that is a lie, that everyone knew that this was going on. So folks, as we look at the value of life, and as we talk about abortion, and as we talk about places like Hope Resource Center, again, if we don't get the value of life right in the womb, then we're not going to get it right. And so they can place blame on the, well, that was just the time I grew up in, the 60s and 70s, you know, where everything went, everything goes during that time. Well, that's not an excuse. What that points to is life doesn't have value. And so we have to step up and lead, not just with our words, but with our actions. So if you're listening to this and you're a boss, you're a CEO, you're a manager, you're a director, are you leading in that way? Are you treating your employees appropriately, both male and female? Because again, our pro-life stance is more than just words. It has to be our actions. When we come back, we'll talk about religious liberty and what that has to do with life and hope and the movement. Oh, I know I'm on the rise again. Some sights on where I'm going. So as we shift focus a little bit and look at religious liberty being reaffirmed, what I wanted to do is look at an article that was written by Andrew T. Walker over at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. It's a great resource, the ERLC.com. I would encourage you to go there. Andrew T. Walker is an author and speaker, and just what he does here is really, really brings us into, okay, what does it mean? Last week we saw the White House release 20 key principles on how administrative agencies and executive branch departments must protect religious liberty. And so what does that mean for places like Hope? What does that mean for your church? What does that mean for those that love and believe in Jesus and have a faith, and then we operate within that faith? So here are a few of the principles. It says the freedom of religion is an important fundamental right expressly protected by federal law. The free exercise of religion includes the right to act or abstain from action in accordance with one's religious beliefs. The freedom of religion extends to persons and organizations. Americans do not give up their freedom of religion by participating in society or the economy or interacting with the government. Government may not restrict or compel actions because of the belief they display. Government may not exclude religious individuals or entities based on their religion. Government may not target religious individuals or entities through discriminatory enforcement of neutral, generally applicable laws. Government may not officially favor or disfavor particular religious groups. Government may not interfere with the autonomy of a religious organization. And so of course, when this was released, many progressives were very upset with that because, well, what you're saying is now, if you were on social media, if you read many articles at Slate or Vox or any of those places, you saw that that pro-choicers, that abortion advocates were saying, well, this is it. This takes away birth control for women. This takes away a woman's right. This is just a direct attack on females, which in reality, that is just not the case at all. What this actually does is it allows Little Sisters of the Poor to say, we're going to provide insurance, but we're not going to provide any kind of medication for birth control or abortion. Well, why would they not do that? Because they're a religious organization. Because Little Sisters of the Poor, that if they provided that, they would be going directly against their belief system, their ideals, their faith, their religion. And so what this does, it doesn't say that a female cannot get birth control. It just simply says that their religious organizations are organizations that say, look, we lead with a certain set of principles. And to provide this would go against those principles, those ideals in my religion, then I'm not going to provide it. And all this says is that those people will be protected. And so that's not a crazy extreme thing to do. It's just saying, look, we don't want to step on your religious beliefs. And it says here, it's not saying evangelicals get away with this, but Muslims don't. It's not saying Catholics get away with this, but evangelicals don't. No, it's saying that they're not allowed. The government's not allowed to favor or disfavor a particular religious group. And then Andrew T. Walker goes further. He says, an additional set of principles focuses on the application of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a federal law under scrutiny by activist groups that mistakenly believe that this act possesses dangerous latitude. These principles are a far cry from theocracy or alleged fears that same-sex couples are systematically banished from accessing a wedding florist. In fact, anyone with a passing that are familiar with American civics should see these principles for what they are, a restatement of basic principle. Anyone who sees controversy in these principles is out of step with the Constitution. And then Walker goes further. The reaction has become routine. Religious liberty is given focused attention because of a sustained attack upon it. And then a parade of horribles theorized by progressive groups is trotted out in order to put bloodshed and discrimination at the foot of religious liberty. The truth is that after the aftermath of these reaffirmed principles, the sky will not fall and the sun will still rise. Why? Because the principles contained in Attorney General Sessions' memorandum represent a return to normalcy. When properly understood, religious liberty applies to all Americans equally. That has not been the case in recent years. The principles themselves do not give preference or privilege to any one religion. Instead, they represent a good faith attempt to restore the loss of a common culture of religious liberty, a common culture that once saw religious liberty a bipartisan mandate, a common culture that saw religious liberty as a shield against the heavy-handedness of government. And so this is everyone is talking about, well, we just need a little common sense. We just need a little common sense from our leaders. That's all we need. If we could just have a little common sense, everything would be so much better. Folks, this is just common sense. Affirming religious liberty is common sense. Telling a Christian that they have to bake a cake to celebrate something that goes directly against their religion is not discrimination. That is allowing them to operate within the framework of religious liberty. And it's also understanding that person can go to any other bakery they so choose. A baker may have the freedom to say, I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to affirm a particular marriage that goes against my religious views. And then that person then has the freedom to go somewhere else. And other people have the freedom to leave. I saw a video earlier or last week, and a pro-life group was meeting inside of a coffee shop in Seattle, I believe. And the coffee shop owner is pro-choice. And so he walks in. Now, mind you, the pro-life people were just sitting there drinking coffee, having a conversation with each other. They weren't trying to convert anyone in the room. They weren't picketing. They didn't have signs. They weren't being, disrespectful. They were just sitting there drinking coffee, having conversation with each other. And he walks in, the owner of the coffee shop walked in and was furious because they are pro-life, and he said they offended him. And then he went on to say a lot of things that were very inappropriate, and he got very disrespectful. But ultimately he said, y'all need to get out of my store. And so they said, well, so you're saying that we cannot be here. He says, yes, I own the store and I disagree with you and our views don't align, and so I want you out of my store. And guess what? The pro-life folks walked out. Now hear me. You know, if you've listened to this show and if you know who I am, you know how pro-life I am, right? And I'm okay. I would stand with the right of that coffee shop owner. The word choices, would I do that? No. But he's the owner. And if he felt like their views were offensive, then I don't have a problem with him saying, I'm not going to serve you because I don't like your views. But we don't get the same treatment. Those that are religious, those that have faith, those that make decisions based on a certain set of principles, at times do not get the same treatment. Because when we say, look, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I'm not going to participate in that because my faith says that I can't. We get called a lot of names and our business gets closed, and then we're taken to the Supreme Court and we lose our livelihood. We lose all of our money because they say that we're bigots and discriminating. But this coffee shop owner that tells pro-lifers to get out of his coffee shop, no one's calling him a bigot. No one's taking him to court. And so what we have to do, again, is be consistent. And what we also have to understand is we're at a time in society that standing for our faith, that standing and saying I am pro-life unapologetically may come with some consequences. Are we prepared for those consequences? Are we prepared to stand and say, no, I cannot, with good conscience, I cannot participate in this because of my religious belief? Are we prepared to do that? And what we saw last week was a small victory, but a victory nonetheless that we need to celebrate. Because as Andrew T. Walker says, he said, we're getting back to the future. Religious liberty affirmed. But it could change with the next administration. So are we prepared to boldly stand, respectfully stand, but boldly stand and say, my faith is the driving force in my life. My God is the driving force in my life. And if that means I lose my job, if that means I lose everything, then so be it. Are we prepared to do that? So on October 3rd, the House passed a bill that would ban abortion after 20 weeks of pregnancy. A similar bill passed in 2015, but this year's passing seems a bit different. Now, I don't pretend to know if the Senate will follow in line, but I do believe we are closer than ever at seeing a true change in the mindset of the American people when it comes to abortion. Now, before I analyze what this passage means, I think it's important to provide some context. If you choose to, you can find article after article this week from abortion proponents calling foul. They see the writing on the wall. They can sense a trajectory change, mind you, that will take money out of their pockets. Much of their dismay at this passage comes from untruths. You see, the abortion lobby has spent the week calling for more safe and legal, quote-unquote, abortions. They claim that this bill would harm women that need to make a decision based on health of the baby or health of the mother. They continue to spout the same tired talking points, no matter how dishonest they may be. But the reality is far different than what the abortion lobby would have you believe. This bill provides exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. This bill does not penalize a woman seeking to acquire an abortion after 20 weeks. The penalties are instead placed on a doctor that would perform said abortion. This is the information you will not read from the abortion proponents. I'm always amazed at the abortion lobby when I find myself in a debate or exchange with them on the issue of life. I'm unapologetically pro-life in every case. When I make this argument, I'm usually faced with this common rebuttal. What about rape, incest, life of the mother? I've heard this same argument since I was in college. This argument, of course, is a false narrative. The goal of the abortion lobby is not to have abortion just in those minority of cases where rape, incest, and life of the mother is involved. This was proven with the passage of the 20-week ban as the exceptions were present. But the votes of the abortion lobby were absent. So who is compromising here? Who is seeking middle ground? The author of this bill allowed for those exceptions, and the abortion lobby continues to be unhappy. The only ones honestly seeking to find common ground are the pro-lifers as they incrementally seek to restrict abortion. These incremental efforts follow along the path of incremental science. It is stunning to me that those that stand for life are often labeled as science deniers. Yet we are the ones celebrating the science. Life begins at conception. A baby inside the womb has a heartbeat one day after fertilization. I could continue this line of thought, but you get the point. The baby continues to develop throughout the pregnancy, but at no point is it less or more human. Science has proven this to be the case in the recent gift of ultrasound, not commonly used in the United States until well into the 70s, has now provided us a window to witness the development of a baby up close and personal. Now fast forward to a baby at 20 weeks in the womb, and no rational and honest person can argue this baby is not a human. From 18 to 20 weeks, movement and breathing activity start to fall into a rhythm that continues throughout life. At 20 weeks, the baby has completely formed the inner ear, and now the baby can respond to a melody of sounds. This child has its own DNA, blood type, and fingerprints at this point in development as well. You see, these are not arbitrary truths. These truths should be taken into account when our leaders are looking at policies that can protect the most vulnerable in our society. My passion for life is not based in hate or disgust toward women, health care, or choice. This passion of mine is not coming from a disdain of science. I am passionate about life and the celebration of it because denying life has value in the womb ultimately denies the value of life as a whole. Many may not be prepared to see abortion as a footnote in history, but the majority can at least agree that a 20-week ban is both logical and rational. We are the greatest and most advanced nation this world has ever seen. Yet we continue to find company with the likes of North Korea when it comes to abortion. It is time we move forward and truly decide to stand for the least of these. I applaud the leaders in the House, and I pray that those in the Senate would answer the call and provide the protection needed for the millions lost every year to abortion. So the 20-week ban is, again, not an extreme measure by any sense of the imagination. I'm always amazed that like I said, in those conversations, when I'm having a discussion, a debate, an argument, depending on you know, the tone and who it's with, when we're having those discussions, I'm always told, what about life of the mother, rape? What about incest? Every single time. And so what do? I look at them and I say, well, okay, well, then let's have a piece of legislation that says abortion is outlawed except in the case of life of the mother, rape, and incest. And then what do you get in response? You're told, well, no, I'm not going to agree to that. I'm not going to agree to that because I think abortion should be able, is a woman's choice, and it should be allowed for any reason at any point in time. And then you go, well, hold on. I thought your concern was rape, incest, life of the mother. Now you're saying that abortion should be okay no matter what at any time. Those are two different arguments. So again, they're not looking for common ground. They're not looking for agreements. They're not looking for areas where we can say, okay, we both agree that it's not okay to restrict abortion at 9 months. It's not okay to restrict abortion at 8 months. But here's the thing. If somebody brought a piece of legislation tomorrow and said, we want to put it in the books that abortion is not allowed at 8 months, the abortion lobby would protest against that. Now, why is that? Now let's look at that in a very honest and transparent way. Okay, so as I push for pro-life legislation, as I push for more more people to join our team and be pro-life, as I push for less abortions, what does that ultimately do? That ultimately means that may hurt my pocketbook. That may mean that some of those kids are born into difficult situations and the state will have to take custody. So my tax dollars may go to taking care of those kids. That may mean that my wife and I need to foster. That may mean that we have more births. That may mean that the federal budget or the state budget goes up. That may mean that my taxes increase. So as I argue for more pro-life legislation, I could be, in the long run, meaning saying, well that's going to cost me more money, and I'm okay with that. Now let's look at the abortion lobbyists who call for more abortions for any reason at any point in time. Does that cost them? That doesn't cost them more money. No, what does it do? It puts more money in their pocket. Planned Parenthood provides over 300,000 abortions every single year. So if abortion goes away tomorrow, they're going to lose millions of dollars. You see, so one side is arguing from a place of this is going to hurt our budget line. And then one side is arguing from a place of we're willing to raise our budget line. We're willing to put our money where our mouth is. We're willing to spend more money if that means more lives are saved. That's what we do at Hope Resource Center. That's why we don't charge a dime for our work. We'll talk more about that when we come back.
We don't know where the road ends, but we're having fun.
So as we're looking at the discussion and the debate and the arguments that may occur because of this piece of legislation or that piece of legislation or this movement or that movement, what I would encourage you to do is when you're thinking about it, see what, especially in this case, who is positioned to lose the most? Right, so the abortion lobby, I mean, you know, at times we focus all that on Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider in the country, and they receive $500 million from the federal government. That's concerning. 318,000 abortions every single year. That's a lot. Millions of dollars in their budget based on the amount of abortions that they provide. But folks, they're not the only ones providing the abortions. There's abortion clinics all over this country that would lose a lot if we started restricting these practices. And so they can argue, and what they try to do is they try to say, well, what about life of mother, rape, incest? And then you say, well, okay, well, let's present a law, let's present a piece of legislation that includes that. Well, that's not good enough. And then they say, what about a woman's choice? And then you talk about the woman that's growing inside of a womb. Well, if you, so who doesn't care about women here? I'm not following. Or then they talk about minorities, and you say, what about the amount of minorities that have been aborted since 1973? What about you want to talk about systemic racism. What about the systemic racism of putting abortion clinics in minority neighborhoods, specifically targeting minorities with a purpose to say we want to rid them of our society? Oh, well it's a woman's right to choose. Folks, that's why our model at Hope Resource Center is, look, we're going to provide all of these services at no cost. Every patient that we see costs us money. Like, it's a weird business model. I want to see as many patients as we can possibly see and serve, knowing, as the guy that oversees our budget, knowing that ultimately we're going to lose money in that. No money's coming from the patient. We're going to lose that money. But that's okay, because we're at a point where we decided we're going to put our money where our mouth is. you're at a point, because you partner with us, you're at a point where you said, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. There's hundreds of churches in this city that have said, we're going to put our money where our mouth is. And so we're going to stand with places like Hope Resource Center so that we can continue to provide the services at no cost. We've recently expanded to include well woman care. Well, why would we do that? That's going to cost more money. That includes labs. That includes all these other things. Again, we do that because we care deeply about women. We care deeply about not just the issue of life, not just the issue of abortion. We care deeply about the people that are directly affected by the issue we care so deeply about. And so as we have these conversations, I want you to know that your partnership, if you go to investinghope.com right now and click on the donate button, that partnership allows us to love and serve on the men and women of this city and the babies of this city. I spoke to a group today in Powell, the Powell Business and Professional Association, and I looked at all the business leaders that are in that room, and I talked about what we did at Hope. I'll just be completely honest and transparent. As I was talking to them, I was thinking, man, how many of these folks are Christian? I don't know. Am I going to upset somebody? Am I going to be too Christian? Am I going to be too Jesus-y with my rhetoric? And I shouldn't have been thinking of that. I should just be completely bold and upfront with our messaging. And the message came across for sure. But the point of that is, we have a message that we shouldn't be ashamed of. Where every life, every individual that bears the image of our Creator, which is everybody that you come in contact with, deserves our love, value, and respect, period. Full stop. No apologizing. And if someone wants to argue with that, well, that's a losing argument. Who can argue with the model that we have in place? Oh, you need a pregnancy test? It doesn't cost you anything. We'll take care of it. And you know what? We'll have a nurse practitioner or a registered nurse perform that for you. Oh, you need an ultrasound? We'll have a trained, licensed medical professional provide that ultrasound for you. Oh, you need parenting classes? We'll be happy to provide that. You need a baby shower? We'll be happy to provide that. Oh, no, it doesn't cost anything. You don't have insurance? That's okay. It doesn't cost anything. Oh, do y'all receive state funds, federal funds? No, we don't receive any of those funds because we have partners in the city and around the state and around this country that stand with us. So when I'm being vocal about my pro-life, my pro-lifeness, when I'm joining folks in Washington, D.C. for to stand for life, I'm doing that knowing that that's going to cost me something. Certainly financially, but also it could cost me a number of different things. When we're bold in our stance and who we are. And so if you want to learn more about how you can partner with us at Hope, go to investinghope.com. We also announced today that we have a benefit concert coming up in December. And leading up to that, I'll have a lot more conversations with that and hopefully have Lawson Bates in here. But Lawson Bates is going to be performing at Black Oak Heights Baptist Church. Lawson Bates is one of the 19 kids of the Bates family. You can watch their show, Bringing Up Bates. And he's going to be doing a benefit concert for us at Black Oak Heights Baptist Church December 9th. It's going to be an amazing night, a fun night. We have a lot of things going on at Hope between now and then, and I will update you on that when we talk next week. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Lift your head.